Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and they say you can't go home again, but I sure did. Right back to Brooklyn with the debut novel, The Family, by today's guest, author Naomi Krupitsky. And just last week, this debut, The Family, became the November Read with Jenna pick. Naomi Krupitsky, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners of Merrick Library's Top Shelf podcast.
Carol Ann, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And so I will apologize to everyone, including you, in advance, because my natural inclination is to slip right back into my Brooklyn accent when we talk about Brooklyn. So everyone hold on to your hats in case that happens. A Read with Jenna pick for November. When you get that call, what is that like? Who do you tell? How do you keep it under wraps?
So you don't tell anyone. You're not allowed to tell anyone. It's so secret. And they told me many months in advance, and it was such a big secret to keep. And people kept asking me how it was going. And I kept saying, like, pretty good. And just knowing that it's hard to imagine getting this much exposure and this much publicity. And I'm just, it's just such an honor to have this audience the first week that my first book comes out. So I'm very grateful for that.
Right out of the gate. So when The Family was announced last week, I let out a scream as if I'd won the award because I had finished the book in advance. And I was telling everyone, wait till November when this book comes out. You guys have to read it, including my friends from Brooklyn. And I was just telling everyone who would listen to me about it. So congratulations on all of that. It is so well deserved. This book, your debut, it's captivating. And we get to read about these two friends, Sophia and Antonia, whose dads are in the Italian mafia. It's a coming of age story, but it's also mixing work family with real family and how those lines really cross over. Tell us about the inspiration for this book.
Absolutely. So the very first image I got was of Sophia and Antonia. So these two little girls, they grow up in adjoining apartments in Brooklyn. So their bedrooms share a wall. They're really polar opposites. So Sophia is really loud. She's kind of bold. She's a rule breaker in a more obvious way. And Antonia is quiet. She's introspective. She's a little bit thoughtful and really lives in her own head. And I knew immediately that they would grow up together. They would be together for their whole lives, which is unique for a friendship. And then I knew how I wanted it to end. And it ends in this sort of climactic way. There's violence. And I had to get those two little girls to this ending. And the rest of the world just filled itself in and became, of course, a huge thing that I was interested in the mafia. And I learned a lot about it. But it isn't where I started.
I am getting the chills listening to you say how you were going to get them to that ending, because all that beauty in between, it's amazing what you've done there. My book is covered with sticky notes and underlines, which is, I know, a big taboo, but it's my copy of the galley, so I can do what I want with it. The borough of Brooklyn is just as much a character, the neighborhood, as anyone else in the book. So if you meet somebody and you tell them you're from Brooklyn, the first thing they say is, oh, well, what neighborhood? And then if you're Catholic, what parish? So you include the construction of the BQE. I love that you do that. The whole book, it feels like I was there. My great-grandmother grew up in Sunset Park on 29th Street. I really feel like when I was reading this book, I went onto Google Images and I started looking up the Gowanus and Red Hook and Sunset Park, and I just went right back to memory lane. It was really something. Tell me about doing your research, because I was really there when you were writing it.
Well, thank you. First of all, to create a lifelike sense of Brooklyn for somebody who's from Brooklyn is sort of the highest honor for me. I grew up in California, but I spent 10 years in New York, and many of those years were in Brooklyn. And my grandparents they're Jewish, they're not Italian, but they're actually also from Borough Park. So I felt this very strong connection to the city and to the place. And it was, you know, the first time I set foot in New York City, I was like, oh, I'm from here. And I think that New York, there are many cities that do this, but for me, New York is the one that does it the most, that it demands to be considered as a character in your life. It's not just a place you live. It's a living thing. It's an organism. And once I started, a lot of it was luck. I started fitting in when these girls were growing up and where the Italian communities were at that time. And I was surprised and excited to learn that one of them was Red Hook, because Red Hook is very different today. And I just love watching New York evolve in that way. It seemed like Brooklyn was coming of age at the same time that these girls were. So there have been people in Brooklyn for, you know, thousands of years, and then there have been settlers in Brooklyn for hundreds of years. But the first half of the 20th century was so vibrant there. And just, you know, the building of the BQE, you say the building of the Brooklyn Bridge just before the turn of the century, it turned Brooklyn into part of the city in a way that it used to sort of, I think, exist as its own sort of pastoral little farming place with these little settler communities. And being able to write that change and to be a part of that change and to incorporate how Brooklyn changed in the first half of the 20th century into my understanding of the city today and into the way that I love the city was such a pleasure and such a privilege.
It's so interesting to go back to that gritty time period. My grandparents were in Sunset Park. I grew up in Borough Park on 41st Street between 14th and 15th Avenue. It was a total melting pot. I thought a really wonderful way to grow up. It's very different now where my great grandmother lives. There's a Saxaw Fifth.
That happens to the best of neighborhoods.
I was just like, what is going on here? So I love that you said that about Sophia and Antonia coming of age just when Brooklyn makes that turn into its own coming of age story. That's so interesting. I love that you said that. They are as close as sisters. They have this gravitational pull towards each other. My book, as I said, is covered with these sticky notes. One of the lines, and I don't want to spoil any of the beauty of the language in this book, but one of the lines is, Antonia feels free next to Sophia, who is lit by an internal flame that Antonia can warm her hands and face next to. Oh my goodness. And that's just one of like an incredible amount of sentences. The way that both of the girls need each other to be seen. You said at the beginning that you were inspired to write these two. They came to you at the same time. And as a reader, I feel like I could relate to both of them at different times throughout the book. I know you said that they came to you together. Did one come first, or they both sort of arrived at the same time?
You know, the image that I can remember actually was of two little girls sort of in windows sharing this wall in neighboring apartments. So I think I've had them both from the beginning. And I love hearing that you related to both of them over the course of their lives, because so do I. And I really liked sort of exploring and testing my own understanding of what it even means to be seen, or what it feels like to have a sense of self. But in Sophia's case, you need attention to sort of validate that. And in Antonia's case, you're actually kind of scared of attention that threatens your sense of self. And so, yeah, being able to have both of them together was such a good tool for me, because I could see the whole story from both of their perspectives the whole time. So I'm so glad that they both felt real.
And we see them growing up when they first set foot in school together. You know, when they get to school, they're all excited to be there. And then the very next day, their initial impressions of what school was, everything changes in a very short amount of time. Very interesting how you do that. And then as they develop and grow, there's another student, this Marco De Luca. And in that scene, no spoilers, we see how the girls are going to develop, who they're going to become. It was so beautifully done. I mean, as much as a scene can be riveting, I was on the edge of my seat for that Marco De Luca scene. I really felt like I was there with the old school desks, and I was in that classroom.
And there's six in that scene, so I'm glad to hear that, because it can sometimes feel unrelatable to be reading about six-year-olds.
No, because I didn't. It was relatable to me. One of the characters that you have is Saul, and I could hear his voice. Your characterizations of everyone in the book, Joey, Tommy Fianzo, Frankie, talk about Saul. He's such an interesting character, and I wonder how his voice made its way to you.
So I have family who immigrated from Europe to Brooklyn during the Holocaust for the same reasons that Saul does, which are to escape Nazis. my family came from Poland, not from Germany. I wanted to engage with that history. And the way that this book was unfolding, it was going to take place in large part during World War II. And so I wanted to think about immigration, and I wanted to think about the ways that, so this family, the Colicchios, the Russos, they're American. But as we all know, we don't always let immigrants feel like they're American. And I think we demand a lot from immigrants, right? There's this trope of like the good immigrant, and the mafia men are not good immigrants, right? Because they're doing what they need to do to protect their families. And I don't think that in our narrative, in our, in the collective, like, fantasy American narrative about immigrants, we don't include organized crime in like the list of things that we hope immigrants become, hypocritically, because unless we're indigenous, we're all immigrants. So I wanted to bring another immigrant in. And Saul is not just an immigrant, he's really a refugee. And he also ends up making choices that kind of push against that good immigrant narrative and push against the good Jewish narrative. And I also wanted somebody to, so Sophia falls in love with Saul. I don't think that's a spoiler because I think it's on the back of the book. Sophia falls in love with Saul, and he's really sort of forbidden for her because she's Catholic and he's Jewish. And many of my friends are products of Catholic and Jewish partnerships, but it still would have been a big deal for her family in this time, and for her family, especially because they live in such an insular community. And I wanted her to fall in love with somebody who would surprise her, because I couldn't imagine Sophia, who is so big and so bold and so loud, falling for somebody who she understood immediately. And so the better I got to know Sophia, the more necessary somebody like Saul becomes. And eventually, I think Saul serves as like a destabilizing element for the whole family, for the Colicchios, for the Russos, for all of these characters. He makes them all question what are the fundamental tenets of their lives, the values of honesty and loyalty and community that they all think they hold in the highest regard. So Saul ended up being really a primary character, even though he enters the narrative late.
I love the conflict that he has, the choices that he makes. As the reader, we don't always know what choices he's going to make. And I love that you build the suspense in Saul's narrative, because the reader really doesn't know. I had no idea what decisions he would make. You kind of think you know, and then until he takes that step or does that thing, you're not really sure what's going to happen to him. And I didn't know what was going to happen to anybody until whatever the last page is, 300 and whatever it is. I had no idea. Also, the conflict between the family, which capital F for business family, and then family lowercase, and the combination of those two things, it creates such conflict. And I want to know, was the title the original title? I can't think of anything better, but was there another title in mind?
I sold the book with the title The Secret Keepers, which I didn't like. And none of the editors I talked to when I was selling it liked. And I knew it was going to change from the beginning, and I was on it. I was fine with it. And my editor actually came to me with the suggestion for the family and the simplicity of it. And it feels almost bold to me to just say, like, this is what the book is about. This is what the title is. And I really grew attached to that. But I can't take credit for it. I just took it in. I was lucky. I had good people around me.
Even the cover of the book and the font that's chosen for the family. I mean, it's just, I love the cover.
Thank you. The cover it's striking and it's surprising, and I haven't seen another one like it. So I'm grateful for that.
It's poster worthy. If there's a movie in the, you know, I can see it on, you know, one of the posters at the old movie theaters and back in Brooklyn back in the day. So you are on this book promotion. You have wonderful upcoming events. Where can readers find you on social media to follow along?
Absolutely. I am on social media just under my name. So Naomi Kropitsky on both Twitter and Instagram. I don't think there's anybody left on Facebook. I'm not there, but I also have a website, naomikrupitsky.com. All of the information about upcoming events and everything else that is going on can be found there.
You are good. By the time the end of this day, you're going to hit that pillow later on tonight.
I can tell you.
I'm exhausted. I'm so happy. When you see your book in the bookstores, I know that you were working in a bookstore, and I think you posted a picture of something like that on Instagram. And I just thought it was so great to see your book in the window of the store. I can't imagine what that's like for you.
It's as full circle a moment as I could imagine. The bookstore where I work is called Blackbird Books. It's in San Francisco. It is a beautiful store. And the people there, I mean, they have celebrated this work like it is their own book. They filled the entire front window with just copies of my book. I think they are responsible for half the sales of this book so far. I'm so grateful to be there. I'm so grateful to have gotten into book selling before this, because I value what they do so, so highly now. And that has been exactly as amazing as you might imagine.
It's all wonderful things. Any book recommendations before you go that I can share with listeners?
Absolutely. So my favorite book I read this year is Matrix by Lauren Groff. Yes, exactly. You're doing a big gesture. So beautiful, life-changingly beautiful. And I keep telling people I would read a cereal box if Lauren Groff wrote it. Like, she is just incredible. And then the character in this book is another one of those characters that I don't think I have anything in common with this woman who's a nun in like the 12th century. And then it turns out, of course, right, that she is as human as all of us. And I related to her more than I sometimes feel like I relate to people I'm talking to in 2021. And then another one I loved that isn't out yet is called Beasts of a Little Land. It's by Joo-hae Kim. She's a fellow debut this year. Her book is also a big multi-generational family epic. It takes place in Korea. It is stunning. And I'm actually going to be in conversation with her on December 16th. So I'm so excited about that.
Wonderful recommendations. I have Beasts of a Little Land as a galley. So now that on your recommendation, everything else falls to the side. And that's the book that
I loved it.
That's the book I'm going to be picking up. I'll post all of this information on the podcast page for this episode. Today's book, The Family, by today's guest, Naomi Krupitsky, is available everywhere. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore, just like Blackbird Books in San Francisco. Remember to go there and grab your copy of The Family. The Family is published by G.P. Putnam's Sons, which is a division of Penguin Random House. Naomi Krupitsky, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners and the patrons of Merrick Library's Top Shelf Podcast. I'm so grateful.
Carolyn, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I'm so glad you liked the book.
I hope you will come back and consider us for whatever comes next. Enjoy this book tour. It is so well deserving, and I am just so very happy for you.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, I thank all of you for joining us today. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts for the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library. Check out our website at merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmier, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.